I guess we're going to get started now. So hi, everybody. I'm Stephen Abrahams. I'm a program manager at Microsoft. I started about 8 years ago. I'm on the Windows team. I'm on a team that they call the Inbox Experience team. We make a bunch of the apps that ship Inbox with Windows 8.1, including Mail, Calendar, the People app. We also do some creative apps like movie moments, and we do some simple utilities too. We did the reading list app, and today I'm going to be talking about Alarms and Calculator, which were two apps my team worked on. So I'm going to first jump right into a demo of those apps so you can see what they're all about. So this is the Alarms app. You've probably seen it in a variety of demos over the past few days, and it's an app that lets you set up wake-up alarms if you have specific things that you want to be reminded of throughout the day, like I have to go to SFO this afternoon to get on my plane to LA. In fact, I heard that there's going to be a delay, so I'm going to push that back half an hour. Put that to there, and save that. I also do things like it helps me remember stuff that happens throughout the week, either on a one-time basis or on a recurring basis. For instance, my daughter has piano lessons on Mondays and Fridays. On Thursday night, I have to remember to take the garbage out, or I have to run out on Friday mornings, and that's not pretty. And then on Wednesday nights, I like to watch Modern Family. So really, this is a great reminder app for all the things that I might not put on my calendar, but I want some kind of audible reminder for. And for me, I keep a tablet by the side of my bed, so it's really handy for particularly for the wake up scenario. It has timers in it as well. You can do things like maybe you have to defrost something on the stove, or in 15 minutes you have to remember to go to the bus. I take the connector from Redmond to Seattle every day, and I'm always in some meeting, and I got to leave before the end of the meeting. So I frequently set a timer for myself to remember to get out there. These timers are great. You can just inline, come up with a name for them. So, I'll call one stop talking, and let's see, maybe in 45 minutes, I'll get that one playing, I'll hit that one too, so you can kind of see what these look like when they're counting down. The other thing we have on here is a stopwatch. This one's actually been running for 92 hours and 55 minutes. I guess I set that up when I was back in Seattle before I came down here. If you do any type of sports, or if you like to time particular type tasks, maybe your kids doing homework, or how long your coworker goes to the bathroom every day, those types of things, this is a good thing. You can do laps and splits. It's sort of a when we were thinking about this app, was really about looking at all the time scenarios and what scenarios made sense to put together in one app. And then you'll notice, of course, that we've sort of reused the same control for reading and for presenting and for editing time. I'll go into that in a little bit some more. The other app I want to show you today is Calculator. Calculator is, this is the first Windows calculator for Windows 8.1. In 8 we didn't have a modern calculator. We thought it was really important that people who use the calculator have a modern alternative in Windows. It has sort of an everyday standard math calculator for doing simple calculations. It has a scientific mode. I use this just to demonstrate pi to 32 digits really quickly for people generally. but you can do all your trigonometry, all your algebra on here. Something that was kind of new and sort of a differentiator we felt for a calculator was to have a great unit converter in it. If every day I need to maybe convert between, you know, tablespoons and, you know, to liters. My wife has a lot of European cookbooks, and a lot of them have volume in different the metric system, and I want to be able to see what that is, because I grew up here in the U.S. and we didn't learn, you know, the metric system, to tell you the truth. We had teaspoons, we had feet, and so, you know, this is a great tool for me when I'm trying to convert within a category of stuff. It's got volume, it's got length. We have this nice little feature along the bottom that shows you some equivalent conversions, including at the end there's sort of a fun one where we show, in this case, jumbo jet. So this is 450 centimeters is 0.06 jumbo jets. And I think we actually have smaller units, and yeah, we have paper clips too. So, you know, it's kind of fun. And I think for volume, we have bathtubs, which is, you know, unique. Most calculators don't have bathtubs in it. And I think there's just, you know, some of the innovation and thinking from that came out of our brainstorming process. That, like, you know, we don't want to just create a calculator that's functional on Windows, but we want to create something that is different and delightful to use and has some surprising moments in it. You know, the other two things about these apps is that we felt that they had to work really great when you're doing something. They were companion apps. Maybe you're, using an app like the food and drink app, which, you know, I use for recipes. In fact, there's a great recipe for asparagus soup on here. Which one is it here? It's this one here. Yeah, so it has all the ingredients, of course, and it's about 50 minutes of prep time, so I can set up a timer, and while I'm using this app to get all my ingredients together, I can get the timer going. If I need to do unit conversion, I can bring over the calculator, drop that in, do unit conversion. So it really allows me to multitask with apps or websites side by side. I'll go into some of the windowing work that we did, because as you can see, as I rescale these different windows, everything is adapting to the space that it's given. And, there is a lot of effort to get, you know, different views to look similarly and for navigation not to stretch or change going between them. So I'll walk through some of that today, too, in my presentation about how we did it. So, that's alarms and calculator. So I just showed you these apps that we worked on for 8.1. Now let's talk a little bit about what it takes to build simple apps, not alarms and calculator specifically, but I'll tell you about some of the issues that we ran into, which, you know, some were surprising to us, and some required us to take a little bit more time and thought to get right. Everybody wants their app to be simple to use, and that's sort of a user goal that we all have for our apps. What does it take to build a simple app? Sometimes designing for simplicity doesn't necessarily mean taking shortcuts or writing less code. Sometimes it means actually trying to execute more deeply in areas that you truly care about. Success or failure often comes down to where you are able to invest your time. And I have a couple of techniques that we'll walk through today that give you the opportunity to invest time in places that let you differentiate your app. Maybe you want to spend more time in the UI. Maybe you want to. Maybe you have a custom control in mind that you want to build. And you know, by following some of these techniques that we used and some of the lessons we learned, you might be able to kind of jumpstart your simple app. So I just mentioned this concept of depth of execution, and that's really the theme of my talk today. And I'm going to talk about how you go about picking a canonical scenario for your app. Even if you know exactly what you want your app to be great at, what that core scenario is, you may not have thought about all of the user expectations around that scenario. You may not have thought about what the core needs of the user are. So I'm going to walk through the process that we took to arrive at those for Alarms and Calculator. I'm going to talk about what craftsmanship techniques that you might employ from the get-go, from when you're actually start to design, when you're starting to think about how people will use your app, the form factors that you'll be building on, the different orientations that they might be in. Will they be in a kitchen, on a table, on a stand? Will they be standing, you know, at a bus stop using your app? Those are things that you should think about because it'll affect your design. And then ultimately, what are some of the things you can do to kind of polish and refine and look at everything from topography to, the globalization, how you use numbers in your app, how you use topography in your app. So I'll go into some of that as well. And lastly, I'm going to touch on how you can leverage the platform, really, and all the technologies in XAML to give you a jump start, both from the standpoint of giving you space to go and innovate in the areas that make your app different. And there's a few things that I'll touch on that are core to many experiences, but that also give you greater reach and let you essentially distribute your app more globally and to different types of users. So what is the canonical scenario? Well, first, you want to find this kind of this core scenario that's going to differentiate your app. It's your focus, and it's kind of your great at scenario for your app. It's everything when you're making your design decisions, when you're making trade-offs in terms of what you're going to have time to build, should come back to this canonical scenario and seeing how are you prioritizing around that. For the alarm app, the defining scenario was the wake-up alarm. Pretty much afterwards, every decision we made about the product design, even though we knew there would be a stopwatch in it, even though we knew we wanted to do kitchen timers, was really about how do we make sure that it's a great wake-up alarm. And I'll go into some of those things. But you really have to take into account how robust you want your product to be, how resilient you want to be to different states that the device might get into. You want to think about things like power consumption. So a lot of those will play actually into this being great at this core scenario. Stepping back for a second, as I said, you know, there are many ways for you to get started. You may know what your app is. At Microsoft, we have one of the most enjoyable parts of my job is getting around a table with designers and other PMs, program managers, and talking about what apps we might build. We spend a lot of time doing this, but you might know what you're going to build already. Many of you will, of course, but you may not know yet what your app's going to be great at. And so how do you determine what your app is going to be great at? Well, first, it's good to start developing a list of core needs. Core needs are things that your app sort of absolutely has to have. For a car, it's like the brakes, you know. But for us on Calculator, we knew that, you know, a basic calculator, something that would launch quickly and that could run side by side was sort of a core need for a calculator. You want to know what generates confidence in your app. The first thing that will probably make people not use your app once they've tried it once is that they just didn't. Your app didn't generate confidence. So, what are the things that you could focus on in your app to make sure that they walked away from your app with feeling like, yeah, I could use that to wake me up in the morning. These timers really are accurate. I could put an egg on the stove, And, you know, in 15 minutes, you know, my timer will go off. So, you know, things like precision, things like accuracy, things like being able to bust through mute. These were some of the things that we thought about for the time scenarios. And then lastly, I think the other thing you want to talk about is, like, what are some of the differentiators, some of the delighter moments that you can have in your app? You know, app development has gone beyond just sort of functionally providing great UX, great UI to, you know, how do you capture somebody? How do you, like, really pull them in and make them feel like your app is doing something special, that you've really understood the scenario, and that they're and now you're going beyond that. Now you are actually giving them, you know, you're making the experience delightful to use. And for alarms, it had to do with, you know, both the direct manipulation of the dial that I showed, but also, and then in calculator, some of those units that were being compared to. So we thought a lot about those, and we had some different ideas, and ultimately we arrived at two or three, and we went ahead and executed on those. Again, like I was saying, for alarms, we had some core requirements. You know, people we knew would not be very gracious if their 30-second timer went off in 45 seconds. People would not be very happy if the screen wouldn't wake up when a notification was shown, even if the device was in connected standby. We know people mute their devices frequently if they go into a meeting, but they forget to unmute those devices. But an alarm shouldn't need to worry about whether or not a device is muted. It should just be able to, like, power right through there. And then, of course, you know, this seems like a basic thing, and really it is, but in Windows 8, you didn't have the notion of a snooze button. You had basically the ability to open an app or dismiss a notification. So we worked with our teams on the platform to make sure that if you are going to develop an alarm app, and now there's an opportunity for you to have a snooze button there, and wherever we throw a notification, the user can go ahead and snooze that. So these are just some of the examples. And, you know, really, we didn't get everything we wanted, but what we did get is everything that helped us fulfill that core scenario. So again, it was an alarm app for everyday tasks. It, you know, had the customizable alarms. It had precise timers. We added these countdown timers, which, you know, not everybody would have thought to have, but are also really helpful in an alarm app to remind you of things that are coming up in a short period. And then we had a stopwatch on it, which you may not use frequently, but we felt, you know, it's kind of organically felt in fell into that bucket of stuff people want to do with a time app. And then really for alarms, it was about having a great touch-first experience. You know, part of this section for me that I'd like you all to walk away with is that when you're brainstorming your concepts, come up with some ways that you can narrow down what concepts you're going to go after. You might use criteria like we did. Is this something I would use myself? Is this something we could be great at as a company? Do I have an unfair advantage somehow that I can go and be better than everybody else at this core scenario? You want to group those common scenarios, things into maybe a single experience. So like we did with time and with calculator, we felt, you know, we could drive an alarm, a timer, and a stopwatch basically off of the same control with a few modifications, a few customizations. And so we went ahead and built a custom control because it was kind of our signature element there. And I'll go into some of the, you know, other reasons around that too. Consider user expectations, desirable features, performance attributes. Performance attributes are the more you have them, the more people love your app. And write down for what your app needs to be great at. What are the goals of your app? So now I'm going to jump over into app craftsmanship. And the way I want to talk about this is really starting back at the kind of the core scenario for calculator. The calculator we wanted to build was the type of calculator that people use 1 to 2 times a day. Our telemetry on the desktop calculator showed that the thing which just had off-the-chart usage, much more than any of us anticipated. And that's when we kind of realized how important this app is for Windows and for customers. We knew that in the store there would be a lot of specialty apps. There's body mass index calculators, there's mortgage calculators, there's tip calculators, there's this long tail of specialty calculators that are out there. We want it to be a basic calculator, something that, you know, hey, I need to add that up. I just type in calc, boom, I'm in calculator. We knew that people would be doing their math with this, so we had to be serious about this. We weren't just going to take any calculator engine. We wanted to use the same calculator engine that people had been using for years on Windows, so they could expect behaviors like order of expression and the way, you know, the percentage sign. All these things worked very specifically in Windows a particular way. We wanted to make sure we weren't breaking people's expectations about what a calculator was supposed to do. And lastly, we wanted to like go beyond that. We wanted to like add, you know, a unit converter, because we felt that's another everyday task that people have. And why have another app for that? That all kind of fits together. And we felt like we could bring that all together into one app and do a good job there. So our design goals for Calculator were really around, A, paralleling the desktop experience, but in a fresh, modern way. Localizing in all Windows languages and regions, because we're Windows, and being great at all sizes. You know, we felt being great at all sizes was one way that we could differentiate ourselves. But really, this is something any app developer can do with their app. But you have to spend some time, again, thinking about how people are going to use your app, how they're going to hold your app, whether they're going to be doing something with one hand. All that's going to, you know, inform where you might put buttons on the screen, where you might display text, what size that text would be, things like that. So a well-designed Windows app has a UI surface that takes up all the available screen area. That might seem like a difficult problem when you have this broad range of device sizes, form factors, resolutions, orientations that Windows devices can come in these days. I want to bring in Fareem, who's a developer who worked on Calculator, who talked about windowing. He couldn't come down here, so we shot some video for you guys to use.
I think XAML overall is a great technology to build apps off of. One of the interesting challenges we had with 8.1 that's very different from Windows 8 was that we didn't have fixed view states of, hey, you're in landscape, you're in portrait, you're in snap, and that's the end of that. We had a more adaptive windowing model here, which was all about different resolutions, different screen sizes, new form factors, things of that nature. And so we had to create UI that adapted in that nature. One of the directions people tend to go usually with stuff like that is, you know, you create different views for the different plateaus you might have and create your UI according to that. And the approach we took was very different, because we used one view and we morphed it and translated it in ways that made sense at different plateaus, at different resolutions, at different orientations. And that was actually fairly straightforward to do with XAML.
So that was Fareem. Since we knew Calculator was going to be used a lot in portrait mode, our goal was to minimize view change and content reflow, particularly going between modes, when adjusting the window size freely, when rotating the device. So in order to be great at scaling proportionally, we had to make sure that menus and navigation were really scaled consistently from view to view. That took some extra time. That didn't come for free. We spent, but we knew that that would, once you were using it and you were moving it around and the UI morphed naturally, that would really feel like a great app. Another area of craftsmanship for Calculator was topography. You think about calculators, it's basically all it is text. This really took several rounds for us to get right. It wasn't as simple as just centering all the strings inside of the buttons. We had superscript characters and overhang and underhang to worry about. Font scaling was also a challenge in different languages, particularly when native digits were turned on. So we wanted type to look awesome in this app. So we spent a little bit extra time, and I'll walk through some of the things we did there. First of all, this is kind of a before view of what calculator looked like. And you'll notice that if you kind of run your eye along that faint red lines that go horizontally on the screen, you'll notice that really all the text, even though they were centered in the button themselves, each one, they were all misaligned. And so nothing had the same baseline, and it just didn't look polished. Some of the text blocks appeared larger than others. The results field particularly felt heavy and kind of in your face. So we went through a number of rounds of design reviews with our design team, our personality team, and we came up with some changes that we could do. The first thing we did was we started experimenting with different sizes of Seago font. We used different text sizes, we used different weights. Ultimately, one weight, one text size didn't do the job. It didn't give us the consistent look we wanted. So we actually had to go in and kind of tweak that string by string. And what we ended up with was a mix of six different sizes and weights to get exactly that look that we wanted. We adjusted all of the margins for each key. We made sure that each block was centered vertically and horizontally after we had done that. This is what it looked like before, and this is what it looks like after. So I'll walk you through that again. Before and after. So that's some of the topography craftsmanship that we did for the calculator app. Now I'm going to switch over and talk a little bit about what we did on alarms and when we're thinking about the dial control for alarms. Some of you might have seen it demoed earlier on at Build. The dial control is a very interesting control for when we were first drawing pictures of the dial control. We were really struggling with how we were going to separate out these metaphors for representing a clock, a timer, and a stopwatch. What we landed on was that we really only had time to do one thing great. Like everybody else, we have limited time, people, resources. But we also said it needed to be able to set and read time. So, people have kind of an expectation of how you set a clock on a computer. It's been around for quite a while. But we wanted to apply Windows direct manipulation to that and come up with something that felt much more natural, it was truly a touch-first experience. We wanted it to feel people doing, play with it, not worry about precision, have the snap intervals be more intuitive. And so we drew a lot of different pictures of what that might look like. I have a video here of Ori, our user experience designer, talking about some of the thinking that went into designing this control.
Part of the challenge with this this simple apps is, one is the physical aspect of it, like how do you fit the simple apps into a Windows 8 model? Like how do you make the content shine? Because it's an alarm app, it's not, it's not a media app, it's not a news app. And the second one is, how do you bring surprise and delight? Because that's one of the goals for the apps in this release. New things we introduce here is the dial control. It's supposed to be simple to use, but it's got like inherent complexity in actually, building it. Because, one thing is we never really did anything like this before, so this is a new type of control. And the prototyping really helps there. It helps us to uncover the potential challenges, both technically and from interaction standpoint.
So, the dial control is, as he was saying, sort of the primary way you're going to interact with this app. As I mentioned earlier, this was sort of our major investment for this app. It was a custom control. It is built off of, effectively, circular sliders, if you will. However, we've basically felt that since it was this signature control, that we would go a lot farther, and we had to do a lot of work to make sure that it was accessible and that performant and all those things. I'll walk you through some of those things we did. There are times when you want to do a custom control. There are times when you look in the library of controls and you said, this isn't what I'm going for. I have a particular thing in mind you want. You can do that. It's okay. We went ahead and used lots of other common controls, and I'll walk you through how we were able to stylize those. Like calculator, getting portrait right for alarms was also a big goal. Particularly since we had this custom control, thinking about how it was going to scale. If you have a custom control, a great control in mind, you need to also think about how it's going to scale. Where the user interacts with it, how is that going to work at 320 pixels or at 50:50 or on a large screen or in portrait or on a small device? And so sweat the details, take some time, extra time there. We did, think about how you might reuse the control in other apps or even in the same app to do similar types of tasks. Just wrapping up that, again, think about how you might reuse it. Think about whether or not you use a custom control. Consider using derivatives of common controls to get flexibility at the presentation layer, but sort of all the power of XAML, including world readiness and access to the globalization APIs and the accessibility. And then just plan on taking extra time to get this stuff right. You will want to make sure your animations feel fluid. You will want to make sure that when you're going in and out of different window sizes, that it feels not herky-jerky, that things like text remain the same size. This last section that I'm going to go into today is about leveraging the Windows platform to give you world readiness, to give you regional contextuality in your app, and to jumpstart innovation, essentially give you back time to work on parts of your app that you may not have had time to previously. When we were building what this new team is that did these apps, we had goals around selecting technologies that really were focused on getting us started quickly. We knew we wanted to build apps for Windows 8.1. We didn't have a whole lot of time, and we didn't want to focus on, kind of the platform things. We wanted to jump right in and start building out UI. We inventoried what was available to us in the platform and in the XAML framework and in JavaScript as well. We felt that XAML would help us get started quickly. There was a lot of momentum on our team around learning XAML. There were people who had C++ and C# experience. So leveraging that prior experience was a big decision point for us. Not that this is specific to XAML or anything, but we have to build fast and fluid apps. We are a team that built the apps that ship in Windows. We have to be great examples of apps that are fast and fluid. And we knew that we wanted all of our transitions, animations, launch times to be performant and smooth. So that didn't so much play into a technology decision as just sort of a way of thinking about how we were going to build the apps. Although we went custom for the dial control in the alarms app, for the other controls, we really wanted to leverage what XAML would provide and then skin them with the designs that came and the personality that came from all of the design thinking, type ramps, and all that. Here's one of our developers, Kay, talking about leveraging XAML controls.
All right, so the designers had a great idea for what they wanted the app to look and feel like, but unfortunately, it wasn't quite along the same lines of what XAML provides us by default. If you look at a regular text box, it has a border, it has a background. With a checkbox or a toggle button, you have a solid outline and the contents within there. The designers wanted something that was slightly different. They wanted a larger typography. They wanted a transparent background for text boxes and just in general, larger buttons. And the great part about XAML is with all the basic controls, you can just override their styles and templates and get the design exactly how you want it to be.
So the other thing we knew we needed to be great at with the alarm app was having great regional time formatting. For alarms, we were dependent upon the Windows Globalization API. This helped us understand whether or not you were in a 12-hour, 24-hour clock region. It helped us understand what the first day of the week was so that we could display a menu of weekdays for our recurring options. It provides supports for language profiles, geographic regions, international calendars. It's really very useful, and we were able to do an awful lot just with what you get from the globalization APIs. For calculator, it was really about having great data presentation and getting, which also was about the Windows globalization API, regional formatting for numbers, preference for native digits, digit grouping, decimals, all of that comes from the Windows globalization APIs. It made it possible for us to, again, focus on a richer UX and contextual experiences for both apps. In the case of calculator, doing native digits took a little bit extra work, and I'll walk through what that was in a minute. Some developers may choose to ignore the choice of native digits in apps. We felt for a calculator that shipped in Windows, it was important to get right. Lots of apps have digit games, apps you can buy stuff, stores, things like that. A calculator, obviously, it's all about the numeric presentation, and we wanted to get this right. The XAML text displays controls don't currently support digit substitution, so the workaround for us as an app team was to perform the digit substitution before handing the text off to the display control. And there's a if you use Windows, globalization, number formatting, numeral system translator object, it's not that hard to do. And instantly, you get a whole other class of users that in the past may not and might have just passed on your app. By the way, this is Bengalese with native digits turned on. You'll notice the native digits are slightly larger than their non-native equivalents. And we did some work to make sure that that they would scale nicely onto the keypad and not be dramatically different in size. So we kind of kept the personality of the app even though we were using native digits. In the past, we never would have considered trying something like that. Another area that we leveraged in XAML, which is let's say you have a lot of legacy business logic that's tied up in some desktop application, and now you want to build a modern app. What do you do? For us, we didn't want to have to go build another calculator engine. Didn't make sense. We had one. We had one that was very mature, that had years and years of you know, features and refinement and bug fixing, all that. What we wanted to do was focus on kind of that top-level modern user experience. So how did we do that? Well, with XAML and using MVVM, which is model view, view model, we data-bound our views to code that was derived from the desktop calculator engine. By doing that, we were confident that the expressions and the behaviors of this modern calculator would map behaviorally to the thing people were used to, the thing that they had been opening one or two times a day for how many years. So, and it gave us the advantage of, rather than having to build that from scratch, we were able to focus on the modern UX. I will say this. Model view model is not going to be great in every use, in every case. And some people point to that the data binding approach will reduce your app performance. For us, we are able to launch our app in 700 milliseconds, 500 of which is a splash screen. And yet we were able to get going, and the big deal is, for me at least, as a program manager, is we were able to spend time on the different views we wanted, the features we wanted, the unit converter, and not have to worry about building this underlying piece. The next thing I'll talk about with XAML is in the controls there, they really are optimized for performance. So maybe you're thinking it's going to be painful to swap out your Windows 8 controls for 8.1 XAML controls. Consider this. The new XAML controls are highly optimized for performance. This is our own kind of our own case study for that, which was when we think about performance, we don't think about the best case. We don't think about the fast machine and the least amount of data that has to be displayed. We think about the worst case. What's the worst? What's the highest load that we can create on the lowest end machine? And we knew that we wanted to be able to support upwards of 20 timers and alarms in the alarm app. And our current stack panel control, essentially the list view for the alarms, wasn't really enabling us to do that and meeting our performance goals. So we set an ambitious goal for ourselves, and we realized that we could do a lot of data profiling on our existing controls, or we could upgrade to item stack panel, Windows 8.1 item stack panel, and achieve a lot of the performance goals that we wanted. In this case, basically a 300% improvement in the highest load. So this is 20 alarms on our lowest end device, which is, an RT device. So, three things that I want you to walk away with in terms of leveraging the platform. One, the XAML controls and the ones that we use, particularly in alarms, but also in calculator, are completely optimized for performance for low-end devices. They're accessible out of the box. They save you time. They give you greater reach. They let you, quickly get started. And as Kay pointed out, you can stylize them and basically create the look that you want. The Windows Globalization APIs are great for providing contextual experiences for your customers. For they obey user customization. They give your users a lot of control over how they want data presented inside of your products. And then lastly, MVVM can be a good way to abstract out underlying logic from your presentation layer and provide you some flexibility back. So again, for us, we had a short time to build a calculator. There was high expectations around what that calculator could do. And so we felt MVVM was the right way to go about doing that. And we didn't experience a lot of the performance trade-offs, but we know that it's not for everybody. So I spent about 45 minutes talking about these three topics. Picking a canonical scenario. This is the first thing you need to do in terms of achieving depth of execution. Employ craftsmanship techniques. Give yourself time to iterate. You're going to make mistakes. Part of having a core scenario in mind, focusing your idea, is giving you more time to make mistakes, giving you more time to iterate your designs, get them right. You'll do a better job meeting user expectations for your behavior in your app, and the app will feel more polished if you just spend more time in specific areas. And so pick those areas, pick your battles, and sweat the details. Lastly, leverage the vast inventory of controls and APIs that are available to you in the platform. for us, again, that gave us a lot of time to go back and specialize, whether it be build the custom control for alarms or make it faster and more fluid, do more animations in the calculator app, do some of those delighter unit type features that we really wanted to to ship to our end users. So there are a bunch of great presentations that came before mine. So all of these are resources that are up to for you on MSDN around designing and building UI, how to create XAML apps, thinking about how to make your app work at different sizes and different resolutions, different formats and different devices, and of course around creating world-ready apps, which give you the reach and the accessibility that your users are going to demand. So thank you very much. I appreciate you coming to my talk today. I'll be around for a few more minutes if everybody has any questions, and then I got to dash off to the airport. The timer control is a custom control. It's not available, but we're working with Tim Heuer and the XAML team to see if it's something that we can ship in the future. Thank you. Yeah, she mentioned that. Yeah, so when they are, we'll make sure you guys are the first. The dial control that we built for alarms is not yet. It's something we custom built, and so there has to be a lot of thought in how we would release that as a common control. Yeah.
Then you show the other languages.
Yeah.
That same effort for all the languages.
Effectively, yes, but although there aren't as many sizes, weights, and so when you fall over to different font families, Yahei I think is for Chinese and things like that, you don't have as many different weights and things like that necessarily. So we approximated. It wasn't but we didn't actually go in and tweak all of the non-Sago fonts as much as we worked on the Sago one.
And if you did, then who looked at them to say they were good looking or not?
Oh, we do an awful lot of testing on international, on different language packs and with native digits, and yeah, absolutely. That's how we ensured that everything fits and looks good and meets our type ramps and our personality goals and is on the grid, and yeah, absolutely. Right.
The dismiss button for the alarm is usually on the same screen as the snooze button, which is just idiotic to me because most of the time when I hit snooze,
Right.
Like you're not looking where you're hitting snooze.
Right. So like, are you dismissing it instead of snoozing it?
Yeah.
How much precision do you need? Yeah.
So
I think that's a good feedback for the team in terms of the design of that, of Toast in general, just that it does, you know, kind of require you to look and to, you know, do some precision tapping. There's, you know, and same thing with the Skype Toast. What we do is we pull up Toast that allows you to select video or audio only or dismiss. And so, you know, we had a, in that case, since we aren't essentially the notifications platform team, we had a pattern that we had to live within. But I kind of agree with you that you should be able to do a sloppy snooze.
Like,
and
like I have an alarm thing. I have a Droid, but you know, it the snooze button is pretty big, but there's also the dismiss button.
Right.
So that's I can't count how many times I've accidentally hit snooze. When, yeah. Or I mean, hit cancel or dismiss when you're trying to hit snooze. So
yeah.
That would be something that I would think that it would come into play.
Yeah, we felt with timers, it's not, it's a little bit different, but with, definitely with the alarm app, that would make sense, yeah. So, yeah. Hey.
Hey, I'm curious.
Hi.
How many people worked on your team on this project? What are the roles and how many hours?
Yeah, so, you know, we had probably one or two UI developers on each app, and, you know, the majority of the work was done for each one. I would say, you know, we did short sprints. We're kind of, you know, we do like a week and a half of coding. We'd stop and we'd stabilize, and we did another week and a half, 2 weeks of coding, and
yeah.
Stop, stabilize. We did maybe three or four of those to kind of get the basis of the app done, and then we went through a whole sort of like, you know, release stabilization period where we there's a lot of bugs that we're taking, and you know, and that's sort of like,
yeah.
You know, less structured, but you know, still requires us to,
okay.
You know, work on and have developers, you know, assigned to it.
How did you integrate a design team?
Yeah,
team?
Yeah. Throughout the whole process, we've had you know, our UX designers, you know, from deciding, you know, of course, what the app is through what are the most important bugs to fix, and so they're really. Yeah, and they come to our scrums, they come to our stand-up meetings, they come to our, basically, they're like anybody else on the team, and we have a high expectation that they actually are driving a lot of the craftsmanship and the final polish look that we want out of the apps, yeah.
Cool, thank you.
Sure. Hi.
So it seems like the notifications are getting rigid.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think for 8.1, the notifications, we really were thinking about the always-on, always-connected scenarios and just sort of, you know, particularly for apps like alarms and apps like communications apps like Skype, how can we make sure that even if the device isn't awake, that people still are getting, you know, precise notifications of an incoming call, of an alarm that needs to go off, a timer, that sort of thing. So, and I would say to some degree also, you know, thinking about, you know, what are the other tasks somebody may want to do from the notification. So in that case, you know, how to answer the call. Do I want to answer it with video or not video with alarms? Do I want to dismiss it? Do I want to snooze it? I think that's just going to now, once developers see that, we're going to see more of those types of things coming from the platform where there's more flexibility in the notification and, you know, or even in the tiles and you know, and you'll be able to take advantage of that in your apps. So hopefully we help push some of that into the platform. Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. There are interesting challenges around, you know, like, you know, that control and how much nested functionality you want to put into it. It's really supposed to be a passive notification, and we're starting to overload it with things that are more critical, more important. Wake up.
Yeah.
answer this, you know, so there's going to be the need for other stuff. So rather than coming up with a different pattern, like the phone has sort of a modal pattern for notifications, for alarms and things like that, where it kind of takes over whatever experience you're in and just demands your attention. We felt that with a PC device or like a tablet, you know, that it was more appropriate and more part of our design language to not, you know, kind of force attention, you know, have, you know, the alarms, they'll ring for 5 minutes and then they go silent and then we leave behind a visual notification, you know, things like that, so.
Because if I don't, I can always ignore the text or I can slide the text down. I can get rid of it if I don't want to do anything with it.
But sure.
But keys that just don't bother me there already.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of that in desktop, I know, around like, you know, blocking and controls and reading. Yeah.
Even though that works on 7 in Office 2013,
yeah.
The chance is just not there in the
code. Yeah. Yep. And there are things that we want to do on the lock screen without ever having to authenticate, you know, for instance, another example is, you know, reboots. Reboots don't necessarily log in the user account, and so notifications don't bubble up after that point. We want to do more about persisting, creating continuity in that experience, even in a reboot, even when like Windows pushes down an update and forces a reboot, or the user decides I just want to like restart my machine, or you know, maybe there's like, you know, their battery dies or something like that. So there's a lot of stuff like that that I think we're going to be continue to push on, make better for users. Okay.
Also, you mentioned splash screen as a really large proportion of your startup time. Presumably, you're doing other things. That's not just.
Yeah, there's sort of a personality thing there as well, which is like we want people to know what apps are starting up. We don't want apps to be able to just like, you know, power up and like, you know, create, you know, UI without you like really knowing. So there's, you know, it may feel as an app, it may feel like a tax, but actually there's actually good user reasons behind having, you know, a display for half a second. Of course you don't see it when you're just when you're coming back from, you know, the back stack or if you're resuming your app. So, yeah, it should be a lot faster. Yeah. Reading list.
Right?
Yeah.
So where do you see you'd go with like converting Paint or WordPad or the other sort of legacy building?
Well, I would kind of turn that around on you. Which are the ones that you feel like are most needed in a modern experience? I think Paint's a good one. That's one for me. I'm constantly in and out of Paint. Yeah, yeah, French Paint, although it's not exactly, I mean, like,
it's not the same.
It's not really image editing or kind of like, you know, it's a different type of tool. It's more of a creative tool. It's funny, I don't even think of Paint as a creative tool. I think of it more of like a image editing tool. Yeah. But, I think.
You got Movie Moments, which is effectively your Windows movie maker.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're going to bring over the stuff that it was traditionally in the system?
I think more and more, yeah. I mean, that's what our team is about, is, you know, kind of identifying what are the gaps in modern and trying to fill those gaps. I mean, I honestly couldn't tell you what the next apps are we're going to build, but I think you hit on it, which is like, you know, we know there are apps people need every day. What, you know, like mail and calendar and those things, those are built. What is the next set of apps? What is like, you know, like now you wouldn't think of going to buy a car if it didn't have a sunroof, right? So like, what's the sunroof app that should come from Windows? Is it around browsing? Is it around consuming feeds? Is it around, you know? I think part of it is also about like, what does the platform ecosystem, where can we as an app team, you know, kind of push things so that Windows can, again, make it easier for anybody to go and build these types of apps as well. We know there's going to be lots of calculators. We love the fact that there's lots of calculators. We don't want to be the only calculator on the system. We want people to have, you know, and app developers to go and build them, but we don't think they need to build the basic calculator anymore. We could think they can build, you know, or if they have their own interpretation of what the basic calculator is, sure, go ahead and do that. But we love them to like fill out like all of the various types of scenarios people need, you know, calculator for math, or graphing, statistics, you know, all these things. So
I'm curious on that. I don't know if you've worked on it, but the Mail app that
yeah.
show next,
yeah.
Drag and Drops.
Yeah.
Are those controls new to 8.1?
Drag and Drop is, yeah. For WinJS it's pretty impressive, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so
are you gonna show that quite heavily in the next session?
I think he does talk about drag and drop. I think he talks about commanding drag and drop and a lot of the, you know, kind of the user research that drove some of the design decisions they made in Mail and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think he talks quite a bit about performance and how to make, you know, an app that is service-backed, performant, and, you know, think about, you know, because, you know, Mail has some interesting issues around, like, well, you know, you get the device and it doesn't have my data on it yet, and there's a significant expense that most apps will put on the user to go get that data, and so like they've thought about that, and also about like how to maximize energy consumption for the usage patterns that they see from the people who are using the Mail app and things like that. So there's some interesting stuff coming. Yeah, Jeremy Epling.
Stick around.
Yeah, stick around. I'd say. Yeah, sure.